This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
This is Bright Side Home Theater.
Hey, home theater nerds, welcome to the Brightside Home Theater Podcast, the podcast that focuses on the experiences we have in our theaters. My name's DJ. You can reach me on Twitter at BrightsideHT, or you can email me at BrightsideHomeTheater@gmail.com. Of course, you can always talk to me or any of us directly by leaving comments at the website, BrightsideHomeTheater.com. And there's spots for comments under all of the episodes and under all of the featured theaters. And this week, we have a guest. We have a special guest. I'd like to welcome Jeff from the HD Report at HD Report on Twitter and the website hd-report.com. Hey, buddy, how we doing?
Good. Thanks for having me on. I'm excited.
No problem. No problem. Thanks for reaching out to me back in, what was that, October, November, when we started talking about our best of the year. We didn't even have a number yet at the time, but you reached out and we were like, you want to collaborate on this? And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, that was great. I'm so happy that you helped us out. And because every year we've been doing our own best of 4K for the year. And this year we wanted to just kind of branch out and like ask other people in the community, you know?
Yeah. So. Yeah, I was psyched. That was my first full year doing this. And I was like, hey, people are reaching out to me. That's pretty cool. Really appreciate it. Let's go over a little bit about your website. Basically, the website, Twitter, you guys break down movies a little different than what I do. You get into the real nitty gritty. I love your breakdown of extras, and I love your breakdown of the picture and the sound. And it's like, first off, before we get to that, how did you get into this?
Man, I mean, into home theater or into like web?
Okay. All to be of honest, it. Let's go. Yeah.
Okay, so to be honest, and this is really funny that it comes around to this. The first time I saw the Lord of the Rings trilogy was when I had a Mac desktop, like a real high-end Mac desktop, and I was doing video editing stuff. And I had one of those really wide Apple high resolution screens.
Yeah.
And I got that trilogy and that box set and I put it onto the screens and it was like magic. I couldn't believe how good the quality was. This is DVD. Okay. This is the first DVD.
That's way back. Set. Yeah. Okay.
And I just watched it and watched it and watched it. It was just amazing. And then the extended editions came out and it was like, oh my God, Christmas all over again. That's really when I got into like, you know, watching high quality video at home, you know, instead of, I had seen the movies in the theater, obviously, but at home it's really intimate, you know, and you can rewind it and you can like jump around in chapters. So that's kind of where it started. And then of course the Blu-rays came along and that was crazy. And so I had to get all those editions. And then, so I launched this website back in 2006 when Blu-ray had just come out and HD television was just coming out. So they were doing that digital, you know, the analog to digital transition.
Yeah.
And so I was really, you know, interested in that. I worked for a media company and we launched a website and that kind of fell through. So I kind of did my own thing because I was very interested in high definition television. And of course, Blu-ray came out. It's just like, wow, this is incredible. The quality you can get at home, HD TVs, you know. So that's kind of where it all started. And wow, it's been a while now. So it's a passion though. It's a passion. Like I'm not, you know, it's just, I do it because I love it. So,
yeah. Well, that's what you had said when we talked back in the fall and we got on the phone. We went back and forth with texts and DMs and stuff for a little while. But then when we finally got on the phone with each other, that's one of the things you mentioned. You said some of the other people at HD Report, you guys do a lot of other stuff too, not just movies as well, right? And you said those people weren't really into the movies like you and I are.
Well, I have a few writers that help me out. And some of them, you know, some of it's more techie. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm really the guy who's really interested in this home theater experience. And we're not super technical. We're not as technical as other websites. If you go on ABS forum or, I'm not a super, super techie, but, cause I try to connect with people that aren't super techie either. Right.
Right.
And try to break it down for them in ways that they might understand. And I worked in television, so I have a background in, I built broadcast cool. facilities and things like that. And so I have an understanding of video, and we did a transition to HD when I was working in television and everything, but it can get pretty complicated.
Yeah.
And so, but if we want everybody to be able to experience, the best quality they can at home. So.
Yeah. And that's what, obviously my podcast is that I said the technical side that you guys do, I think is a great compromise because I do almost no technical stuff. I have a working knowledge of this, of everything, having been in it for so long, but I want to get into the experience, and you guys bring that, that little bit more of tech stuff. And just when we got on the phone, just like anything else, I was like, you've got to come on the podcast with me, because we just kept talking and, we a lot of times we go on tangents. We had a good time, but I think it's funny because we're sitting down here and we hit record, and this is the first time I'm finding out that your whole entire experience with home theater started with Lord of the Rings. So it's just a coincidence that I asked you, I'm like, hey, are you available for, we'll do part two of Lord of the Rings? And you're like, yeah, you didn't even say anything then.
Yeah. Well, I was young too. And, buying a home theater was very expensive, but I acquired this really amazing Apple system with a great display, and it changed my life. My uncle, who, he has, money obviously to he's an older guy and had the money, and he always had the cutting edge home theaters. I mean, the biggest TV, the biggest audio system of anybody on the block or in the family. And, but I was poor, so I couldn't really compete with him.
Yeah.
But I did make a mistake, because when he was asking me about HD at this time, when everything was coming out, I said, I said HD DVD. I think that's the way it's going to go. I mean, at the time, that's what I thought. So he invested in HD DVD.
Oh no.
And bought a bunch of discs, and I sent him tons of discs, and he, I think he kind of holds it against me to this day, because that wasn't the format that was picked.
I bought both. I started out and I bought both, to the point that I think I had almost 20 movies identical. Because I didn't know which way it was going to go. I remember the Bourne series there were a bunch of those were out on Blu-ray and HD. Whatever had both, I was buying both if it was possible, right? Because I wanted to be able to go back and forth between the two, see what the difference was. And to be honest, I thought HD DVD, it was going to go that way. It was the superior format to me. It had not just the picture quality and sound quality I thought was better. Blu-ray had a really rough start. Their discs weren't very good. Even the picture quality and a lot of their discs that were coming out weren't as good compared to the HD DVDs. But then the players themselves, the HD DVDs players had better load times. Like, you put a disc in, you remember the early ones in both formats, really? It was put your disc in and hit play, go get a drink, pop some popcorn, you come back, maybe the FBI warning was coming up. It took forever. And then for Blu-ray, it really wasn't until the PS3 came out and that was superior across the board, because it was basically a working computer that could run a Blu-ray disc really well. But before that, I think HD DVD had been long dead by then, but I agree with you though. I don't blame you for picking that one. I would have, with the way it was playing out, I thought HD DVD was going to win too.
Yeah. Yeah. And the brand just seemed right too. If you just throw an HD in front of the word DVD, which DVD people understood for so long.
Right.
And then nowadays you would have had Ultra HD DVD, which would have made sense too. The brand seemed right. They didn't hold as much data, the discs, at first. But in any case, I guess one of them had to win.
Yeah, exactly. And look at it now. Blu-ray is a pretty cool name. Looking back, it is a pretty cool name. So, and it is funny that between the two of us, you actually came into home theater for picture. because it sounds like you were really blown away by the picture quality that you are getting through mm-hmm. Lord of the Rings and then started looking more in depth. I came in the exact opposite. I came in for sound mm-hmm. because I started in the 80s when we had, you know, if you had a 32-inch TV, that was a big deal. And that's a 4x3 screen. So now you put your black bars on because any real home theater fan back then had to get right. the letterbox version. Right. So you're really shrinking your screen down there. And it was just picture quality was not the big deal. It was if you could put basically what I have in my room now into your living room and then have it on a little screen, you still kind of had that home theater feel. So that's interesting that between the two of us, we each come from two different origins there. That's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. All right. Anything else about the website that you'd like to promote, talk about?
Well, come on to the website. We got something special planned for the the 5-year anniversary of 4K is coming up next week. Do you realize that?
No. What was the first 4K disc?
Oh my God, you're going to kill me now. I think it was Pineapple Express was one of them. There was a Spider-Man one. It was in February of 2016.
Wow.
So, yep.
Wow. That's awesome. I had no idea. I just did Godzilla 2014 last week. Yeah, last week. I just did it last week. And of course, this week we get the news that we're getting it in 4K on, what is it, the 13th, I think it is? March 13th, we're getting it in 4K. And that's, hey, people listening to the podcast, I begged for it in the podcast and we got it a few days later. I can't complain about that.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. And Best Buy's got a pretty cool looking steelbook. If you're into steelbooks, it costs a little bit more. But
Seen that yet.
It's very cool. If you look at my website or on my Twitter account, HD Report, Twitter, I put a high res picture on there. I was able to get one of the, a real high quality image of it, and it looks really cool. I might have to break down and pay a little bit more, because I can't get steelbooks from any of the studios. Well, actually, I get some sometimes from Paramount, but the ones from Best Buy sometimes are hard to get.
Yeah.
So a lot of times I just go buy them myself because they're so great.
So yeah, I'll check that out. I'd love to pick that up. So what are your big plans for the anniversary?
Oh. So actually, it's the week after. So we're going to give away some 4K Blu-rays. So probably the big thing. But it's actually the 23rd of February 2016 is when the first 4K Blu-rays came out. It was Hancock, Pineapple Express, The Amazing Spider-Man 2, Salt. What happened to Salt?
I like that movie.
Did you?
I love the video game.
Did you see the little video game?
No, I didn't. I don't remember the video game. I just remember the movie, and I thought I liked that movie. And I thought that
the
was
other one was the Smurfs 2. So those were your first five.
Yeah, and they all not all of them, but a bunch of them when they first started coming out, they had Atmos in them, and that to me was the bigger mm-hmm. seller, because I actually bought an Oppo 4K player just so that I could get more Atmos titles, because it was few and far between of the Blu-rays that would have Atmos titles, but I had Atmos capability in my room. So I wanted that. And then I would, run a 4K down, convert that to I only had a 1080p projector at the time. Mm-hmm. So, I started buying Blu-rays as soon as I could, because that's it. It was the sound that sold it for me.
Were you able to also, hear, DTSX?
Early on, I was an early adopter to Atmos, so we didn't have DTSX at the time. Mm-hmm. And I waited for DTSX probably maybe the first year. It was late in the first year when I finally was able to swap out my receiver, but I had 2 years of just Atmos before DTSX. I can't remember mm-hmm. the dates, but as soon as I could get it, and it was more prevalent because DTSX came out, not a lot of movies had it. They just told you that, okay, here are the receivers that'll upgrade to it, and here are the receivers you can buy. But there wasn't a lot of content right off the jump. So,
yeah, and Atmos is one of those things too. Like, I think HDR and Atmos have been a little bit tricky for consumers. Are we actually hearing Atmos? Are we actually seeing HDR? It's been one of those things because not all TVs will tell you if there's HDR in the stream or on the disc. Like, I've seen an LG, sometimes I have a little logo that pops up that says HDR, you know? But like my Samsung doesn't do that. You have to go into the actual output of the Blu-ray player to see what you're outputting. And the same with Atmos, like sometimes like, you know, how do you know? So like my system has a little tiny blue light on a Samsung that tells you, oh, it's Atmos, and that kicks in. But I don't know if how familiar with our, you are with other systems, but is it easy on other systems as well?
Well, a lot of the people, like if you have a receiver, a lot of people, the receiver will say right on the front, it'll say whatever input you're using. And then once Atmos or DTSX is triggered, that's what you get. Just automatically, it'll say it right on the front of the receiver. So
like
that's
a little LCD, just like a little LED display thing. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And depending on what brand and everything, it's, they do it different ways, but there is usually something that'll trigger it. It's more to the point that a lot of times the misconceptions are the quality of Atmos, because like streaming Atmos is a different Atmos than an Atmos off of a disc, and the same, and you, we don't even get streaming DTSX yet. That is coming from what I've heard. So, but it's more of, you know, like, what are we getting? Like HDR, not all HDR is equal. Not all Atmos is equal. Mm-hmm. And it's more to like, can you really see the difference? And what I'm noticing now, because I'm actually reviewing movies more and more, like with a more critical eye, having been doing this for just over a year now, it's, I am seeing the difference. Like, okay, now when I go to something that doesn't have it, I don't need to see it on my projector or on my receiver. I can actually see a difference, and then I'll check. Oh yeah, look at that. I picked up on it. Mm-hmm. I think the bigger difference to me over HDR, it's the color gamut between what 709 and 2020. And I think that's a big difference too, that a lot of people, that goes hand in hand to me with HDR.
And I think, like, you know, this could be a conversation for another date, but I really think that HDR is, it's overblown. It's getting exploited a little bit. It's, I don't know. It just, sometimes it just looks fake. It's just one of those things that if it's not done right, you don't really like it. You know, I'd rather just go back to like 8-bit color, you know?
Yeah.
But
well, like you said, it has to be done right, and it has to be done in the right environment. It's like to take advantage of HDR, you have to have the right lighting in the first place. If everything is all grayed out the way you're shooting it, then the best HDR in the world isn't going to help you. If the gradation in the original shot is really limited, then HDR to me isn't really going to enhance any of that, because you need to have those extremes and to be able to, you know, see them on, be able to have the HDR take advantage of it, for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know who I think does a great job with that is Netflix, because I feel like that they know they're streaming, so they know they're limited, and they shoot things in a certain way that it takes advantage, and it kind of really shows off what HDR can do, even through a streaming service, because the way they've shot their scenes.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think I obviously you're giving up something with the bitrate, but the HDR, I mean, I haven't seen much Netflix that looks horrible, but I've seen some 4K Blu-ray discs that I think don't look very good.
Yeah.
It's just, it can be too much, you know? And then the other thing too is like, in the end, and this is what I've been trying to get into a little bit when I talk about discs, is that, or even streaming on TVs, is that you can override all this stuff. So we could tell you the best setting to put, and then all of a sudden you boost up the saturation on your TV, or you put smooth motion on, and then you know, and it's just like most people that I go, when I see with their TVs, they've got that soap opera effect on, and it drives me nuts.
Because they think that's what high def is, or 4K is. They're like, look at that 4K picture. Ooh. First off, that's not 4K.
Oh, my God. But there's actually, in the last few NFL games, there's been this really cool shot. And I think they call it a Venice camera. And it's sitting on the field.
Yep.
It's got really shallow depth of field. And you'll see like a player, and then the back is completely kind of blurry, but the player is like super sharp and just stands out. I don't know why I thought about soap opera when you said that, but it's a really nice shot as opposed to like, and it's in your face, kind of like that soap opera look,
right.
but it's really well done as opposed to like the really crappy look that you get with the smooth motion.
Right. It's when you create a better depth of field by blurring out, you know, you change, what is it? The aperture on the camera or something.
Yeah.
It'll change what the, what is in focus and what is out of focus, and the higher the number, I think it's your f-stop or something, I think. And that creates that depth of field that is just so much fun. It's like, I love to see that in movies. We got some of that in this part two of Fellowship of the Ring coming up. There were a few scenes that I thought that were like that, but go ahead.
The way depth of field works is the larger the aperture. So the smaller the number, the larger the aperture or hole to let light in. So you see really good high depth of field stuff in lower lighting, which is very, very cinematic look.
Yeah.
The higher the f-stop number, like an f22, f32, when you get higher, that's a smaller aperture. It's really tiny and it lets less light in, but it creates like a broad focal range. So like if you did a landscape and if you want everything in focus, you would have a high aperture.
Right.
If you just want Frodo's face, just his eyebrows in focus, you'd use the lowest f-stop possible, f1.8 or 2, whatever, like the lowest thing you can get. And sometimes that's tricky because if you have high light, if you have really bright light, you can't open that lens up too much because it's too bright.
It'll blow everything out, yeah.
Right. So that's kind of how it works. But there'll be some cool shots, even though CBS is not providing this Super Bowl in 4K. There are going to be some really cool shots that they've got planned. So I'm excited to see it.
So is this Super Bowl actually, and it's awesome that you're on again, another coincidence, not that we planned this, but here's a great question. Or I think it is anyways, is this Super Bowl are they shooting it with 4K cameras or is this going to be a 2K camera or a standard camera and they up convert it on their end and send it to us in 4K?
So this Super Bowl is not going to be in 4K. CBS blamed the coronavirus for not being able to do a 4K production, which I don't get because they're doing so many other innovative things. They've got a trolley cam that goes over the eighth row, I believe, of the stadium. So it's like if you were sitting in the eighth row, it's the view you would have as the camera goes by. They've got these Venice cameras that sit in the field. They've got an aerial cam that goes over the whole field, and you've probably seen that before. And then they have cameras with 4K and 8K capabilities. I don't know if they're shooting 4K and 8K. I would imagine they might be, and then somehow down converting into their production. But this whole thing is, it's from what I read from CBS, they are doing this in 2K or 1080p, I guess.
Yep.
And I don't know why they wouldn't shoot some 4K and 8K just to have the footage. It wouldn't make sense not to.
They probably are. I'm sure they're NFL films and all that. I'm sure they're doing all their stuff because you'd be crazy not to just to have it archived and then break it out later on the Blu-rays and DVDs that they put out for each team or whatever, whoever wins. I'm sure they'll have that.
Yeah. So I understand though, because they have so many cameras. They have cameras at the, at the pylons, in the end zone, they have, I think, 8 of them. And these cameras are probably very small, like almost like GoPros or enhanced GoPros or something. And just the overall, there's so much going on. There's replay. The production is so incredible. I think they had, was it 200 cameras? It might have, it might be that many. It's a large amount of cameras. And so producing something in 4K is just not possible yet. Like Fox did not produce their last year's NFL Super Bowl in 4K. It was 2K and it was upscaled, but it looked incredible. I mean, it looked like it was so much better than what we get with this 720p and 1080 crap, 1080i crap.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, even 1080p is going to, I remember when you could first start streaming, like some of the games that were over in Europe, you would pick them if you could get them streaming, like they did it on, I think Amazon did one once, and I would get that in my theater, and there was a distinct difference between the broadcast and how compressed the broadcast was over what you would get with streaming, because I had Dish television at the time and I also had cable in the house because I have cable. I need internet, right? So I had a basic cable package, but I was carrying Dish. And with my basic cable connection, I could watch CBS. So I would go CBS Dish network. I would go CBS through cable. And then if I could see a football game on streaming, I would check that out. And it was like, it was literally like a step in each, all the way up. It went, you know, cable was absolutely the worst. Dish had less compression, and then streaming at 1080p, because that would actually go to 1080p at the time. Mm-hmm. I think Dish had 1080i, and then cable was, you know, 720, and it was spotty at best. But if you didn't know any difference, it looked fine. But to go between them, it was like cleaning your glasses each step. It was right, like you could right, see right, the right. difference.
But I think like the refresh rate is just terrible with streaming. I just can't. I mean, have you had any good experience with, you know, good refresh rates on streaming from any service?
Yeah, I do. I'm 100% streaming now. I got rid of my Dish over a year ago. I'm 100. I do. I watch all my television through Fubo TV, and it is pretty good. I just upgraded my cable, my internet connection here to a 1 gig connection. And when I did that, I just did that like 2 weeks ago. And when I did that, it smoothed everything out. I mean, all of my channels changed better on Fubo. Everything is just like, I mean, super fast, really nice, and no lag times. But even before that, I was at 100 megabytes a second. I would do a speed test, and that's all I was getting. And that's still pretty good. But every now and then you'll get a digitized picture or something like that. But football games, CBS was good. I watch hockey on Nesson here, the Bruins, and that mm-hmm. came out pretty good. That comes out really nice. But no lag. I mean, we're behind the rest of the world. I'll have buddies who are watching a football game and like, oh, did you see that catch? And about 20 seconds, because if you're watching it live over the air. But yeah, I have no real issues with refresh rate, and it used to be bad. I used to go to people's houses where they were streaming, and I was like, I could not watch this football game on streaming because you'd see the judder behind the players, mm-hmm. and it just yeah. didn't look good to me.
Right.
Let's get into the show proper for now, and we've got a bunch of other stuff to talk about here. So this week, I always mention my new Twitter followers. We have Patricia Jones and Fizz Digi Collects Corner. I just read the names that people that follow me, and then welcome to the home theater community. Thank you, you guys. Really appreciate it. Take a look around. Have some fun. And we got some this week. SVS put out a tweet. Why is having a high performance home theater important to you? And I replied to the tweet, and they were just putting it out as a general question, but I thought it was a great question because I can't answer it. And that's what I said in the tweet. I was like, I'll try to answer it in the podcast this week. But if you actually ask me why I love home theater, why having my theater is important to me, I don't know if I can give an answer. I just love it. It's like, I love the problem solving that it comes with, because you're always looking at issues. You're always looking to upgrade. If everything's running perfectly, that's the time when you start messing with stuff. It's like, all right, what can I make better now? And invariably I screw something up and now I have to fix that. But I've just always loved the mix of art and technology, I guess, is what for me is what I really, really love about home theater, because we have artists on one side trying to create art, and now I'm trying to create that environment in my home. And I just love that constant battle of trying to upgrade that and get that the best possible version of what those artists are trying to create. And that's obviously couldn't say that in a tweet. So that was my answer. How about you? Like, why is this important to you? Like when you watch that Lord of the Rings, why all of a sudden was it important to follow up with every disc in 4K and all the way to today? Why was that important?
Well, first of all, that movie's fantastic. So you can watch it over and over and over and still get stuff out of it. But yeah, I think definitely home theater is relevant right now, as you know, you can't go to the darn theaters. You know, so I think it's been a great year for people really kind of learning more about how to set up a good system at their house. And I hope theaters come back, obviously. But I love the big screen. I think it's great. And I think what it is to be one thing it could be is that I want to bring that experience home. Right. Yeah. You can only go see a movie for so many months, you know,
yep.
And then you want to have the same experience at home. And the other thing is like you too, like I'm kind of a geek. I might love like running cables. It's kind of seems yeah. stupid, right? It seems a little bit nerdy, but I love like making the cables all pretty and putting them in the right places and building, you know, channels. And sometimes the technical stuff really gets frustrating. But
oh yeah,
you know, it's fun. It is fun yeah. to get it running.
Yeah. It's
my wife hates the, you know, the 10 remote controls I have sitting on, you know, there. She probably doesn't like the fact that I am so into this, but I have, you know, I mean, I've got like a, you know, Roku, an Apple TV, yep. you know, Fire TV. And then I've got a Samsung Blu-ray player. I've got a Sony Blu-ray player. I've got all this equipment hooked up and she hates it because you can't watch what she wants to watch all the time, like right away. I'm just like, just use Apple TV or just use DirecTV or whatever. It's just easier. I don't know.
Yeah. It's like you said about the wires and everything. It's like, mm-hmm. It is bringing that home theater or that theater experience home, because for me, your movie is Lord of the Rings that got you into it. Mine is Star Wars. Seeing it in the theater, as my listeners know, it's like it always comes back to Star Wars for me. My dad took me when I was 7 to see it in the theater. And then in the 80s, when you're watching it on HBO and stuff, I'm like, I want to see this again the way I saw it then. It's that memory of being with my dad in the theater and hearing that lightsaber go off. So you want to recreate that. But then to me, when SVS asked this, it was like, but why like the high performance? Why is that so important? And it was because it really comes down to the art part. I mean, I'm an artist. I grew up as an artist. I went to school to be an artist. And that's basically I love art. But I love technology. I used to read Popular Mechanics, you know, in school. I'm like, I'm an artist in one day, but like my study period, I'd have to go to the library and be like, grab a Popular Mechanics and just flip through that. So you mesh those two together. And I think that's what gets you into that. That's what gets me into that home theater. And like you said, with the cables, it's funny because like go behind a theater rack and most people are like so confused. Whereas I feel like you and I are like, this is heaven. You want me to straighten it? I'm like Sheldon on Big Bang Theory. Like, you want me to straighten this up for you? I can make it look neat. I can make it look this way. But there's times when I like the chaos because I like to show people my theater rack and have them go, what the hell does that mean? I know exactly what everything means. And it's and today it's easier because it's just an HDMI cable for the most part.
It is easier, you know, for sure.
20, 30 years ago, you've got all the different cables, the composites, the components, the S-videos, the, you know, everything. There was so many of them. And you had your yellows, your whites, your reds, like your ins, your outs. And it's like now it's unidirectional. So what's the difference, you know, or multidirectional? Like I said, couldn't put all of that into a tweet.
No.
Big news came out this week. I already mentioned that we have Godzilla 2014 coming out on March 23rd. Oh, 23rd. Sorry, March 23rd, not the 13th. So the week before Godzilla versus Kong, we get Godzilla 2014 in 4K. But we also got big news this week because we've been talking about it on this podcast about Heat in 4K coming May 25th. That's pretty cool. So a bunch of people on Twitter, we started going back and forth about what, and I was like, what's our next request? I have two requests. Since people are listening to us about what we want in 4K, I would like to see The Abyss and True Lies. What is your wish list of 4K movies?
Oh man, I've got a list. I mean, I wrote a couple, at least 20 of them, but I think, you know, Avatar is going to be, I think it's going to look really sharp. I don't think that's going to come out. Yeah, I know it's, I've heard it's in the works, but I don't think it's going to come out until they have the newest Avatar ready.
Right.
You know, they use that. But man, I've got so many movies I'd love to see. I mean, where would I start? I mean, to me, any of the Quentin Tarantino's, the Kill Bills, oh my God, can you imagine that?
Oh, yeah. Day?
Yeah, I mean, I could go on forever.
He would probably still go with 5.1 sound, too. He's fine. One of those, like, you know, like a Christopher Nolan where he likes the 5.1 audio. So that would be interesting. But yeah, to get Kill Bill, that's a good one in 4K. That would be pretty cool.
And I, you know, I love all those movies from the 70s. Like, I love All the President's Men. You know, I love those, the quality of film back then I really loved. And I think it would look good. I think film, I mean, you know, there's this whole thing about how, you know, with film, you could scan that to be whatever you want it to be. Because film is inherently infinite in terms of pixels. But all these movies they've been filming in 2K, you know, or I'm sorry, 4K or, you know, 2K mastering or whatever, like the movie shot in, if it's digital, it's limited. It cannot go any further, right?
Right.
So you could scan in an old film, like an old film like Spartacus or like the Ten Commandments, where these films were turned sideways. The 35 millimeter film was turned sideways to get more resolution, which is absolutely insane. And to me, it seems a perfect example of how you could scan an 8K and see what happens. I mean, I think some of it has been scanned in 8K, but I mean, that's a lot of data though. I mean, that's an insane amount of data.
Well, but, I had mentioned that a couple of weeks ago because it seems like the trend is going away from physical media and it's going into like the streaming. And a lot of people are nervous about that because streaming is limited. But it's just because streaming is limited now. Once the technology catches up or we start downloading movies instead of streaming them, which is a big difference. You're still getting it through your internet, but you're downloading the entire movie and then you watch it. And my son just showed me, I was saying video games are coming out at 100 gigs. Right? Your PlayStation or your Xbox is downloading these games and they're 100. He showed me one today that it's like 260 gigs of information. So if they can do that for a video game, it won't be long before the physical media is the limitation, right? Because what if you did put out like a Ten Commandments in 8K? Or a Lord of the Rings in 8K, but that was shot digitally, so you're not really going to get that. You can't really master that up.
The first one was shot 35 millimeter.
Oh, was
Aeroflex,
it?
Okay. Aeroflex cameras, but The Hobbit was shot digital 4K. So both are not upscaling, but they're very good. But hey, I hear what you're saying.
But the amount of information would be huge.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just a matter of time before packaged media goes away, but I think it might be packaged differently. Like, for example, let's say you get a John Wick 3 movie package, right? But it's just the digital codes, but you get something with it. You might get one of the coins, right? You get that coin from the hotel, and then you get the code to get the digital files. You know, somehow packaged media, I think I hope will live on, because I just still love it. It's like, you know, it's like Christmas when you open up these discs, but anyway.
Yeah, it's not as fun just to be like, click, now I have the movie. You like to display. We like to display things. Like I have, you know, my certain, like you said, like we were talking about earlier with the Godzilla, you know, and getting that steelbook. Those are a big deal. That's a big market. So you're right. It's like, even if they go digital, you'll still want to go down to the store to buy your digital copy so you can have your little memento to put on the shelf to say, look, I own this movie. I love this movie.
Right.
And like Star Wars, the box set. It's like everybody that bought that is I'm displaying it. It's like, that's part of the fun.
Yeah.
So hopefully, but yeah, it's like, but I mean, even we're talking about, you know, in a little bit, Fellowship of the Ring Part 2. It took two discs. So we're already at a limitation here because the movie was so long. It took so much information, they couldn't fit it onto one disc. Mm-hmm. But if you could have downloaded that, you would have it in its entirety. So we're already at the limitation, really.
Right. But it is amazing how discs are still hanging around where CDs are really are not. I mean, I just sent 100 discs, CDs to my dad to see if he wanted any of them. But DVDs are still, I mean, DVDs still command like 75% of the market share.
Yeah.
DVDs. And you thought they would be gone. I mean, you're talking about 15 years after Blu-ray premiered, and DVDs are still the dominant packaged media, disc media.
DVDs. DVDs now, I believe, they've been around longer than VHS as a dominant media, if you think about it. Hmm. It's got to be close to that because VHS came out in the 80s and DVD came out in the 90s.
Late 90s, right?
Yeah, 98-ish. 97, 98, because I was heavily into Laserdisc in the 90s, and the transition happened late in the 90s where you had a transition over, because I have some Laserdiscs from 98, and I'd have to look at my collection and actually date the years, but I'm sure I have some from 99 as well. But that's when DVD took over. But just in that market alone, and I even remember the DVD talk, that was when VHS was... They were like, oh, DVD will never take off because you can't record on it. Because people were using the VHS to record their soap operas during the day or their sitcoms at night, because we didn't have DVRs at the time. So that's what kept VHS around a little bit longer. Mm. But then DVD has now been around. We're going on over 20 years.
That's a good point. So what took the place of recording? DVRs, I guess.
DVRs, yeah, because I remember my dish at the time in early 2000s, late 90s, DVR, they had their first DVR where you could pause live TV and stuff. That was the big deal, and it made everything. Once that happened, that's really what killed, you know, VHS, really.
And TiVo.
TiVo. TiVo, I believe, TiVo. Came out remember in the late the, 90s.
Feels the big, like it. Was it who was it at the Super Bowl? Was it Janet Jackson?
Oh yeah, the most TiVo'd moment on yeah, the Justin Timberlake and Janet Jackson slip up. Yeah, so that was in 2003, I think, something like that. 2003, 2004. So yeah, right around there. But yeah, TiVo had been around, and you know, it's. That's kind of what killed VHS, but that would put VHS at almost 20 years, right around that ballpark of being a dominant, because VHS didn't really take off until late 80s. That's only a 10-year run if you go late, right up until DVD. So it's very interesting. But DVD, I don't think it's that baffling why it's so good still. It's just, I think we're such a small percentage, people like you and I, that really like the higher quality. And most people don't notice a difference and don't care, and they want to pop in their DVD and that's it.
Right, right.
All right. We have movie of the week, movie and scenes of the week, and we have just one this week, G. Cornell on email, I believe, Hunter Killer, which is a submarine movie with, what's his name? Gerard Butler. And who else was in that? I bought it. It hasn't come in yet. I was hoping to have seen it before we recorded, but I wasn't able to make. But he said, DJ, ever see Hunter Killer to talk about on your podcast? Good movie in the 2:39:1 ratio with Rock'em Sock'em sound. If you haven't, pick it up immediately. You will love it. Make a big bucket of popcorn. And I did pick it up immediately because I can't believe a submarine movie made it, slipped past me. And I love submarine movies in a home theater. They're just so much fun. U-571, those depth charges. Oh. I mean, even though Bon Jovi bites it, but it's still a good movie.
it's a fantastic, that's a fantastic, that to me is the best submarine movie of all time. But I did see Hunt for Red October.
Yes.
In the theaters after the 4K remaster. And I'll tell you that's a pretty darn good looking film, both in the theater and at home.
That would be my favorite movie, but I would have to give it to U-571 for the actual in-room experience. I think it's better than Red October. I just like the Red October movie a little bit better. I saw that in the theaters back in the 80s. My son loves that movie. He kind of grew up with that as well. We have a blast with it. So. Twitter and email comments this week. Steve Ratcliffe at Steve Ratty on Twitter says, Brightside HT, do you think it would be good to get menus in 3D like Netflix or your own collection? Not the film, just the menu we use to pick a film. I think it would add to the experience. And I think what he's referring to here is I actually put a video out on YouTube last week, right? Before I got this or after I got this, the video went out, but it's like on the Zapiti where you choose the movies and they scroll like in a 3D fashion. Like everything right now on Amazon or Netflix, everything's flat across your screen. And how long will it be till one of these services actually institutes like a 3D interface where the movies kind of overlap each other, and as you choose them, they come to the foreground?
I don't know. That'd be pretty nice. Maybe a projection like a Minority Report or something like that, or like, you know, the Star Trek, but they've got the transparency in front.
I mean, yeah.
I mean, it sounds pretty advanced, but we're probably not.
But it's really not. It's, yeah. I mean, you could do it in a 2D flat platform, but it would look just giving that scroll like a carousel rolling through, like a round carousel where your movies come forward as you choose them. I think that would make, like, say, the first streaming service to do that would create, like, it would be a more dynamic interface that I think people would be like, oh man, have you seen Netflix? They just did it this way. And people would gravitate towards that. It, just because it was cool looking, you know, and it's funny he asked that because it's a great question because I'm surprised nobody's done it yet.
Yeah. It just probably has to do with the software and the app and how they could do that. I know like, you know, Flash just died, Adobe Flash. But you could kind of simulate that kind of effect with that. I'm not sure that JavaScript and HTML canvas, like these web technologies, I'm not so sure they can do that yet. It's a little bit advanced, but I guess in an app you could program it to do whatever.
Yeah.
There's, you know, these apps, the thing is that the apps, the more and more you develop them and the more weight you put into them, then, you know, the more processing it takes on a TV.
Right.
You know, for example, maybe it wouldn't matter with an Apple TV streaming player or something, but like, if you notice a lot of these TVs, the smart TV apps, they suck after a while, you know,
like
I've got a 10-year-old, you know, HD TV, and like, I can't really use the apps on it because they just suck.
I'm not a big fan of smart TVs. I'm more of, I like the idea of everything being separate so that like, if your TV craps out, you still have everything on your Apple TV or your Roku or whatever, and you just switch it to another TV. And you get better. I feel like you get better updates that way. And like, if you're going to run an Apple TV, Apple is going to update their TV as opposed to, you know, your TV running a Roku through it. Is it? I don't know. I feel that way too. But I know a lot of people love smart TVs. It's very simple. You just plug it in. There's nothing else to plug into it. And I get that. And I've done that in different rooms. But I mean, if I had my choice, I would have an external box attached to my TV just for that reason, like you just said.
Yeah. And it also comes down to like, when you buy a TV, you're planning on keeping it usually a little longer than a streaming player, right?
Right.
So if your streaming player is out of date in a few years, that's not bad. You just go grab another one. But if you're putting $2,000-$3,000 into a TV, you kind of want it to last a little longer than that.
I mean, and I've heard the argument that you could always at that point go get the streaming player.
That's true.
You know, so I've heard that too. And I've actually recommended that to people that really like it, because I'll always give them the caveat, like, this streaming player that the TV has in it may be outdated by the time, like you just said, the TV can still live on, but the streaming player might be outdated. But at that point, you're going to want to connect something to it. And a lot of people end up liking that idea. Like, all right, fine. I'll just get a TV for now. And next time I'll just buy a streaming player. So it can work out either way. Carl sent an email, how the iconic THX Deep Note was made. And there's a link in here. I'll put this link in the show notes, but it was pretty cool. There was a video in there that showed you how it got made. And then you could actually, after you're done watching the video, you could go through and there was another video or a link of all of the THX sounds like in a row, like all the different versions of it. And I've seen a bunch of stuff over the years on that and how, like, what the THX note, what that means and everything. It's for calibrating. It's been used for that. And it's a pretty cool video. It's hard to explain. You got to kind of watch the video. So I recommend everybody checking it out in the show notes. Click on that. And I mean, everybody knows that iconic THX sound and how cool that is. It's hearing that in the theaters and then being able to recreate that in your own home theater has always been one of those fun things. Also got a tweet from WV Brew after last week's podcast about Godzilla 2014. quote, after your podcast, I watched it in 3D. 3D doesn't add a ton of fun, but who needs bass transducers with this one? Wow. And yeah, it's Godzilla, even in Godzilla 2014, even in 1080p with, no Atmos, no nothing. I thought it was a great disc. I thought for a 1080p version with no HDR, I thought it was done really, really well. I couldn't get over it. All last week, that's all I kept saying about Godzilla. I was like, this isn't in HDR. I can't wait to see it in HDR. And then literally like 3 or 4 days later, they come out with the okie dokie. I don't know if you've seen that disc in a while. You'd think it had HDR.
Yeah, I can imagine they had some really good source material. You know, I think it was a 2K movie, but yeah, I mean, they probably have some really good source material for that. And the 2019 Godzilla movie was fantastic too. I don't know if you like that one.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing each of them working up to Godzilla versus Kong. Mm-hmm. And I had so much fun watching Godzilla. It was a Saturday afternoon. It was snowing out. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to watch Godzilla 2014. Then I was going to watch, what's the next King Kong one? I always get the names mixed up, but the next one in succession, I was going to do a creature double feature and put that out in one day. But I got so excited with Godzilla that I just kept going on that. But now the week before, I told everybody on Twitter this week, because of the 4K, I'm going to re-review the 4K Godzilla in conjunction with Godzilla King of the Monsters the week before we get Godzilla.
Oh, that sounds great.
I'll get to do my creature double feature on that week. So I really can't wait to see that in 4K. And I'm going to use my same notes and my timestamps and go back through and compare it, the 1080p to the 4K, and see what the difference is. I'm really looking forward to that.
I dare you to go back and do the Matthew Broderick Godzilla movie from the late 90s.
I own it. I have it in 4K. Yeah, I bought it in 4K. I don't think I've watched it yet, but I liked that. I love Godzilla movies. It's Godzilla. It's like, I like what they're doing right now, and I've talked about this for a couple of weeks now. I think it's funny how people are complaining about the different sizes of either Godzilla or King Kong. Mm-hmm. And it's like, we're talking about a giant lizard and a giant ape, and now we're going to say this isn't accurate? No kidding. The premise of the movie isn't accurate. Let's just have fun. Come on.
Suspend your disbelief for just a little bit.
Yeah, I know. It's like, I said this to my buddy the other day. I'm like, so the size of them is what bothers you. The fact that they're standing on top of an aircraft carrier fighting, boxing each other, it'd be like me and you in a canoe. It's like not the most stable ground, but yet these guys are going nuts. Like, what a great punch King Kong got in on Godzilla. Oh, but his size isn't right. What? What? They're not wearing boxing gloves either. It's so stupid.
I don't know how you could beat Godzilla's laser beams, though. Laser breath, that's pretty nasty stuff.
Yeah, that nuclear breath that he has, that's why he's king of the monsters. And he's such a nice guy. So there's something going on. I can't wait for Godzilla versus Kong, because I think we're getting Mecha Godzilla as the big bad. Mm-hmm. I don't know about you. If you've seen the trailers and you get that glimpse when they're running down the stairs and in the background, I love that. Like, are we getting Mechagodzilla? Are we getting, like, they're going to be fighting a big bad. And it's first, just like Captain America and Iron Man or Thor and they always battle, or Batman versus Superman. It was called Batman v Superman. They didn't fight each other the whole time. So I think we're getting the same thing here. And everybody knows that. They even say it in the trailer. We have Millie Bobby Brown, I think, had the line in the trailer. Like, Godzilla's trying to tell us something. He doesn't do this for no, like, he's not destroying cities or whatever he's doing for no reason. So it's going to be interesting and a blast. Also, Steve Ratcliffe on Twitter replied to last week's podcast about Godzilla in 2014 with a pic of the Blu-ray and popcorn is popping. So that's always fun when listeners, hey, I'm watching it right now, and they love listening. And when I get to spoilers for a movie, I always say the popcorn is popping. So it's fun when great listeners are playing along. Yeah, that signals like we're going into spoilers. WV Brew with his solution to 3D Atmos, 3D with Atmos, because a lot of movies don't, a lot of 3D movies don't have Atmos tracks to them. So a lot of listeners are like, how they're, we're all trying to find ways to do this. And he says he's watching Kong Skull Island in 2K, with his 2K in 3D. He's trying out two different players. So he bought two different Panasonic Blu-ray players to play the same movie. And what he was doing is when he hit the remote, when you hit play, it started both of them at the same time. And he was listening to the audio track from the 4K version and watching the 3D track. So he was getting, yeah. And I, there was a little bit more in depth, and I asked him how it sunk, like synced up. Did it sunk up? That's not even a word. It synced up, and it was a little bit more, but he got it, and he said it worked really, really well. But just the idea, like, that's the lengths that we go to for just to try stuff out, and you get that you want to have that Atmos surround. Like, I would love to get an Atmos track with Gravity in 3D, because I think both tracks are really good. And to get those both together, oh, that would be incredible.
That's tricky to sync that up, though, to be exact.
Isn't it? It's like, but he did it, and he said it sounded great, and he told me about a couple other movies I can't remember off the top of my head. But he was saying, like, it worked. So they weren't, like, super high-end Panasonics. They were 4K players. But I want to say they were a few hundred bucks each, you sync them up. You have to have obviously both discs, but it works, and it got you both. I know the new Turtles movies are in 3D and have Atmos on the disc. So I've watched those. Those are pretty cool. And it is a different experience to get that nice 3D sound along with a 3D picture for people that like 3D movies. Some people hate 3D movies, but. Just another experience. Let's see. Where are we here? That's about it for Twitter and email comments this week. Jeff, that brings us to the topic. We're an hour in here. We've been chatting away. We're finally getting to the topic. Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring, Part 2.
Part 2. I can't believe you're breaking this down into two. You're insane.
Well, I had to, because my first podcast went like I did part one, and the podcast was just me by myself. And I talked about that movie for like an hour and 20 minutes, that podcast. And I was like, you know what? It just makes it more fun because you can get a little bit more in depth with the movies, with the, each edition of it. I just thought it would be such a long process to do the whole movie at once. So break it down one a month. I'll go through the year, and it's just more fun, you know?
Let's do it.
Let's start with this. The popcorn's popping because we all know we're into part two here. Typically, when I open my breakdowns, I always open with the open of the movie, but we're in the middle of the movie here. Mm-hmm. So Do you want to go through and we'll just break down scene by scene, or do you want to just jump around to your favorite scenes? Because I have everything here and we can just jump, whatever you'd like to do. You're the guest in my home here. Let's have some fun.
I think try to stay a little bit in sync with how the movie goes. I mean, I rewatched it, and this is the second time I rewatched it, first to do a review and the second to talk to you. I think we talk about sort of the way in sequence it works. This two kind of starts off with Bilbo talking to Frodo, right? Like,
yeah,
when you pop that in there, and that's one of the, actually still for me, one of the scariest scenes in all these movies, when Frodo, when he freaks out with that face.
Oh, when Bilbo goes at Frodo. And I have that at 2:10. Bilbo, and this is my notes. Bilbo goes nutso with a jump scare.
Yeah.
And I was like, one last, and all he wanted to do was just hold that ring one more time. And it's like the sound I thought was really, really cool because it's at the front of the room while they're having their conversation. So like the conversation was totally at the front of the room. But then as Bilbo like goes nuts, the sound came at you and you could feel it wrap around you in the room. And I thought that was really, really cool. And it felt a little heavy too. the sound. It was like really ominous, like boom. It was like in his face. I mean, you could speak to that. The picture of his face and the look of his face and everything was really cool how sudden that was.
Yeah. Have you paused the video to see what the face, you know, the actual visual changes that his face makes? It's very scary. It's frightening.
Is it?
Yeah.
I mean, I see it watching it happen, but I didn't pause frame by frame and go through the facial changes that they use.
Yeah. 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 I mean, this, so we're talking about the extended edition, I presume.
Of course. Yeah.
Which extended. I mean, you know, from what I've heard, Peter Jackson actually really likes a theatrical better, but he made the extended version for fans and people that love the books and everything, you know, because it does add, this particular movie adds another 30 minutes and to the film, which is crazy. And you know what's really nuts is that I was looking at the credits, and the credits for the extended editions are 30 minutes long.
Right.
Because they're, I think the majority, like 20 minutes, is like thanking the official Lord of the Rings fan club.
Yeah. Yeah. So like when I broke it down, I saw the timestamp on like the first one's like 2 hours long. And the timestamp on the second one's like 2 hours long. And I was like, all right, so I got almost a four hour movie here, what it broke down to. And that's why one of the reasons I decided to break it up into two parts for my breakdown. But then I'm watching the movie and I'm like, wait a minute, this is wrapping up in a few minutes and we got a half hour to go. I realized, I was like, oh yeah, I do remember hearing that. It's the fan club. And you scroll through it and it's just name after name after name after name of the fan club. And that was pretty cool of them to do. And it'd be pretty cool to see your name in there too.
Definitely, definitely. How do you want to? You want to just kind of talk about some different scenes?
Yeah, let's do. We'll just jump around and do whatever. Because first off, I already broke it down the first half, and we know this movie has tremendous picture. It has a tremendous sound. Maybe you could talk more to the overall. What are some of the negatives of the picture? Because I've heard a lot of people talking about, like, there's some edge enhancement that isn't very good, that, you know, maybe they went too far with it. I don't tend to deal too much with that because I like the experience and let the movie wash over me. And a lot of times that helps you forgive a lot of the little things like that. But to me, you saw my review when we did our reviews together for this. I'll be comparing most movies for a while to this.
Yeah, I mean, I think overall, I mean, it doesn't get much better than what they've done. I mean, you know, when they color graded the movies, maybe we talked about this before, but the, you know, Peter Jackson wanted these movies to kind of flow as a 6 movie series. So right. Fellowship, you know, originally had kind of like a greenish cast to it, which I kind of liked, but all these movies kind of have been color graded to look almost the same. And the color timing was different. So the first film was, you know, different than the digitized one. The Hobbit series, which was more digital. I think the color's good. I think I saw some green screening stuff that looked a little bit, you know, not so great. When they're in the Mines of Moria running around. I mean, a little bit of that, like, I feel like they maybe could have done a little bit more work on that. The scenes with the elves, you know, how it's a little soft. I like it.
I actually have a scene that I really liked, and I thought the HDR, let's just jump to it. At 57 minutes and 6 seconds, okay, I labeled it the cauldron. I gave it 3 boxes of popcorn for exactly what you're talking about. So this is the scene here where Frodo is leaning over that cauldron of like water, and he's looking in and seeing the Eye of Mordor, right?
Okay.
And what's her name?
Galadriel?
Galadriel. Not easy for me. So anyways, when he's looking in, I thought that it was very sharp. You had great contrast in there, right? Between obviously the eye and the fire and the dark scenes, and then looking at him and everything he's looking in, and the sound is like really grabbing you because it felt like you were being pulled in. I thought it was a very dynamic scene, but as soon as they came out and they showed that what reality was and Frodo talking to her, everything was softer. She was mm-hmm. softer. He was even softer. So a lot of times you'll see that in a sitcom or something where they'll have an older actress on or something and they'll soften. You'll see it's like when they show one guy and it's like you see every wrinkle in his face and they go to her and like the whole scene is softer. Well, this was the entire scene, even him. So really, I thought the HDR and the sharpness of when he was looking in what he was seeing in his mind, that was really showed off the contrast of the softness that they were trying to portray. You know what I mean? And that's where I think the HDR can really, really help in a situation like this, because it creates a wider range, not just in that particular scene, but when you go to something soft, it really accentuates that softness.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Yeah. And I think some directors or viewers might want to see consistency in sharpness. Or if you take a film like Tenet, that's very consistent, yes. throughout pretty much throughout the film. And with this, the Lord of the Rings, and also the Hobbit, you have that softness. Whenever there's like the elves appear, like when Liv Taylor shows up, as Arwen, and it's always softer. And I guess I kind of like it, but I think it's supposed to, like, visually it's supposed to make you feel like there's something supernatural or something immortal about what you're experiencing, because the elves are immortal, right? So I think what Peter Jackson was trying to do is kind of make you feel like you're experiencing something that you haven't experienced before. So the same sharpness that you see in Gandalf's beard, which is, the shots of him are amazing, super sharp and clear, because he's got great eyebrows and hair all over the place. And, those are super amazing and show off your 4K, but in HDR too. I mean, great, great color. And then you see, Galadriel, and she's like, it's like a painting almost, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's intentional. I mean, obviously it's intentional.
Yes.
You don't have to do that, but.
Well, that's what I mean. This scene here at the 57-minute mark, it really shows how intentional it was. And I think they're trying to show that these elves, they are a softer creature, but not soft as in weak. Because, I mean, you see Legolas through the whole thing. He's one of the greatest warriors in the series, right?
Right.
But you wouldn't consider him soft that way, but like a fairer, it's... I don't know how to put it, but I think he was definitely going for a feel when they shot the elves. And like I said, it's like this scene in particular, it's funny you mentioned it. And I remember watching it and making my notes and I'm like, this is incredible. I love this. And that's why I gave it I marked it as 3 boxes of popcorn, because I thought it was really cool how Peter Jackson did that. And that gets back to what I said earlier about, why I love this, the theater. That's an art. And they're trying to create something, and they're trying to create an emotion out of people. And by us building our theaters and checking this out and getting the best possible we can get, it enables us to really experience what, in this case, Peter Jackson is trying to do. And I think, mm-hmm. That exemplifies it right there, just that one thing. What else you got? What else? Another good scene, because I'm sure I have it here.
I think so. It starts off, the movie starts off with Bilbo and Frodo, and then there's the road to Mordor, right? And the sweeping shots of New Zealand are just beautiful. In the Pass of Charadus, am I saying that right? Where Saruman casts that spell and starts dropping down all the snow and everything. That's a great shot too.
Yeah, I have that one. That's at 9:15, and I labeled it light as an elf, because if you look, every character in the Fellowship is trudging through 2 to 3 feet of snow. It's like up to their waist. And there's Legolas walking across the top, and he's just floating along, because that's that fairness that the elves carry, Yeah. So and I remember, I love that scene. We'll get to the home theater part of it in a second, but when I saw these in the theater, a buddy of mine that we would go to all the midnight showings, regardless of the movie. If they had a midnight showing, we went. We were big movie fans. He was a big Lord of the Rings fan. He read all the books, read The Hobbit and everything, where I came into this blind when it came out in the theaters. So we would be in the theater and he would be giving me the backstory and telling me, check that out. Only if you read the books and you're there opening night, are you noticing that I never would have noticed Legolas on top of the snow. You know what I mean? Because there's a lot going on in this scene. This, it's, and that's one of the things that we'll get to in the picture and the sound too. There's a lot going on here, but seeing Legolas standing on top of the snow, I never would have noticed it if, at least not that night, if my buddy hadn't pointed that out to me. And I've always, you know, always loved that. But the home theater side of this scene is, like you said, it's like the lightning hits the top and the bass here is incredible. The picture is incredible. And this is where I think the picture and really gets the HDR really comes through, because you have, it's a snow scene. The further you look into snow, the blurrier everything gets. But the stuff in the foreground gets crisper. The dark tones are darker. And I thought in this particular scene here, you just let that play out from that 9:15 mark, and you can really see that snow going in front of you and the gradation of color, which is almost monochromatic in a snowstorm. You have whites and grays, really. So I thought that came out really, really nice. That's a great scene.
I really like that scene. And one of the things I talk about, and what I've been noticing the more I watch these, is that this is a little bit of a criticism, my own criticism, that Peter Jackson uses these same shots again. So in The Hobbit, he uses the stone giants, if you remember that scene. It's almost the same type of look, and it's a big, it's a longer scene. And of course, like The Hobbit does these things a little better because it was done 10 years later and technology was so much better. But there's a lot of repeated scenes. And you know, it's very formulaic, even though the stories are written in reverse, right? The Hobbit was written first before The Lord of the Rings. But anyway, that's just kind of a little critique about that scene. I love that scene, though. It's great. So then they have to go, they can't get through, so they have to go through the mines of Moria. And there's a shot of the walls of Moria, you know, where that creature comes out of the water. That first shot is a really beautiful shot, too. The landscape shots, I think, to me, really can show off like the quality, that, you know, the sharpness, and also sometimes how HDR can really add a wide range of contrast and luminance. And that shot of the wall is a really beautiful shot. It's not like super colorful or anything like that, but it's a very nice shot. It's so realistic looking.
When they first get in, I think it's Dwarf City. It's like, it's kind of that shot. Is that the one you're talking about?
Well, when they get, you know, when they come down from the pass, they go, they want to, you know, this is the place Gandalf doesn't want to go. Right.
Right. Right.
And they're trying to figure out how to get in. It's that there's one shot, and I don't have the exact time.
Oh, they haven't gotten in the door yet.
They haven't gotten in yet. I should have stamped these times for you, but it's the first shot you see of the wall, and it's a wide shot. It's a really nice shot. It's only like a couple seconds. You know, some of the best shots only last a couple seconds. You know, it's like
right.
So I pause it. Like I'll pause it to enjoy another second. You know.
I've done that.
Yeah. So then they go into Moria, and those shots of that mine are just incredible too. I mean, this is not real, right? But it looks so real on a good TV and a good system. You feel like you're really in that space.
Oh yeah, yeah. Like I have at 1643, I have a mine, and that's when the serpent kind of attacks. They just get in the door. So what you're talking about probably came like a minute or so before that.
Right. When they're trying to figure out, well, as soon as they get there, you see him walking up to it. Yeah.
Right.
Before they let the horses go and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. But then I have at 24 minutes and 34 seconds, we have Dwarf City, which I labeled it Dwarf City, because that's where you really get that look, that in-depth look. Like they're these little tiny characters, but you're really getting to see everything that they showed.
Yeah.
And I think that's a little bit what you were saying, where it's like maybe a little too much green screen, or maybe they could have done a little better in there. But I still thought it looked really, really nice, especially on like my 110-inch screen. I'm like, I felt like I was in there.
Oh,
and the sound is really nice with it too.
Yeah. So this is the city they refer to as the dwarf city. You remember the line from, Gandalf, they're sitting there. What I really love about the Fellowship of the Ring is that it takes time. Like they don't mind pausing the film for a little bit. You know what I mean? So when Gandalf is like, he doesn't know where to go. And he says, I have no memory of this place. Like they just stop everything. It's just like all of a sudden you stop with them. Like, you're just like, well, what the F are we going to do now? Dude, yeah. What are we supposed to know? Right. But that scene was cool because they introduced a small glimpse of Gollum, like, you know, following yes. them. And I think that might've been why they stopped there. So then he gets a breath of fresh air and he's like, okay, I want to go this way. But I love how they're not afraid in that movie to take a second and just like make you wait with them, you know? Whereas a lot of movies, it's just like constant action, you know?
Right. It kind of builds the anticipation too. Yeah. It's like you're as a viewer, I got to imagine the first time, if you've read the books and the first time you're seeing these movies, you're probably like, you know what's coming, but to your point of like they're stopping, you're like they're stopping. Well, what's gonna and it kind of builds inside you and waiting for you to get to that next scene that's really gonna erupt.
Yeah,
and you'll be like, oh, this is so much fun, because one of the things I notice, not in just in Lord of the Rings, but in almost any movie, it's the pacing is usually when they slow down, you're about to come up on something really big, mm-hmm. whether they really lower the volume in the you know, mm-hmm. the preface to something. And it's like, just to set your ears, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like, oh, I don't really hear. And then bam, you get hit with something that makes right. it seem louder by comparison.
I mean, case in point, the next scene that they walk yep. into is the Grave of Balin, where, what's his name? Was Pippin, it Merry? The Pippin.
Pippin or Merry. I can't remember which one, but I knocks the bucket down
he's
the well
around the skeleton, the thing, you know, yeah. and then like you're saying, it's complete silence, and then all of a sudden you hear right. the
but
thuds.
It's kind of a comical scene because everybody's oh. like, oh, and you're hearing the noises go down. It's like a Three Stooges episode.
Ooh, the Duke.
Yeah, so it was like, yeah, exactly, that's why I thought it was, isn't it Pippin Took, is it, or is it Merry? I don't know. There, I know Pippin and Merry were the two outcasts. I can't remember.
I'm
which
trying to
one
picture in his head. I'm in my head. I'm trying to picture.
Yeah.
And I think it was Pippin. Yeah, it had to have been Pippin. Yeah, because Merry right. was. Yeah, Merry. No, it wasn't Merry. It was Pippin.
So, but that was exactly what we're talking about. I had in my notes, but like I'm like the silence of this is really setting this scene up, mm-hmm. and then you just get the as the orcs start to mobilize down below your room, the base, it's just it just comes right through you. It those, just vibrates, and you're like, burr,
burr. Yeah. I mean, all those cave scenes with Gollum or with the orcs and everything, they're great opportunities for Atmos and surround sound to really see what they can do, you know?
Oh yeah, there's so much going on. And then that battle itself, ton of great bass. Just
oh yeah,
just take that giant monster alone. Every footstep,
troll.
Yeah, every footstep he took, it just shook your room. It's like, yeah. like I'm writing my notes while I'm watching these scenes and I'm like typing on my phone and like I look down, but you could feel every step while you're doing it. It's so much fun. And then all of the sword swinging going on all around you. It's just, that was such a great scene. It's like, I labeled that one, they're coming. meaning, you know, here come the orcs. But at 26:50, I had it, and I gave that one 2 boxes of popcorn.
That's great.
And right after that, we had 35 minutes and 31 seconds surrounded, and that's when the fellowship is surrounded by the orcs. They're down. Mm. It was, and what I labeled it as for is when that Belruk.
Yep.
That's when you first heard it. So yep. another scene that kind of went quiet a little bit because they're getting surrounded by the orcs. You think they're done, mm-hmm. you know, because they're literally hundreds of them all around them. And then all of a sudden you get that really cool, deep, like visceral bass, like vibrating through you. And that's that Belruk making its movements and noises. And even now the orcs take off. Mm-hmm. Like, we're out of here. And it was, I thought that one was really cool, how it vibrated your room, and it was really, really, really strong. And another scene where we lowered the volume a little bit just to get that effect. After that, I have at 37 minutes and 15 seconds, the arrows, and it's Legolas, keeps the orcs at bay. Very minor scene here, but it was, they're trying to go down that bridge, the steps, right. and Legolas is firing the arrows, but you're at the top. You're kind of where the orcs are, and the arrows are clinking in my room, they're clinking off the sidewalls right in front, like right around me. And I thought that was, there's a really cool Legolas arrow scene later that we'll talk about that was one of my favorites. But this one here was another one that's kind of like the pictures really quick. But if you listen close at that 37:15 mark, you hear the tink, tink, tink all around you.
And so, oh, it's great. I love that. Cool. I know what you're talking about. I love that. And there's a slight moment too when after Gandalf falls, Aragorn, there's when he's just about to leave and turn the corner, and
yes,
some arrows go over his head too. And it's kind of similar. It's very nice sound.
Yeah. It's why, like, I don't do it, but I know a lot of people do. People boost their rear channels because you just love hearing stuff around you.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like you get your room tuned. And it's like, okay, this is the way it's supposed to be. But then people will boost up the rear channels a few decibels just because they want even a little bit more of that around them. Mm-hmm. They want to have a little bit more. And it's like, there's just something about that in your home when you can hear noises around you. And it's like, I run in my living room, I run a sound bar, Sonos sound bar, and two Sonos ones off to either side. They're not properly placed or anything, but they just give a little bit of that sound. And sometimes my wife and I will be watching a Netflix movie or something upstairs, and the dogs will be with us, and there'll be a dog barking in the background, and both dogs are like looking in the one of my Sonos ones that's supposed to be a rear channel is practically in another room, and the dogs will be looking around the corner like trying, what is that? What is that? It's like even the dogs are enjoying it.
That's great.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of the Gandalf, at 40 minutes, 32 seconds, you cannot pass, which is Gandalf's line, and just a great sound and HDR too, with that Belruc and the bright fire and that. I mean, it just a tremendous, tremendous scene.
It looks great. Great. And the effects that they produced were so good for, 20 years ago. The Belruc looks really nice. And very sharp too. It's not just a massive flame. It's like this sharpness in there, this contrast. It's really nice.
The contrast in the smoke I really enjoy in a lot of these movies that I've been noticing lately, but you get that real nice depth to those billows of smoke where you get darker shadows so you can really see the shape of these. It really feels nice. It looks really nice. And this scene has a ton of it because you have the bright fire, but then you also have the dark charcoal looking smoke, which has great gradations between it. Really, really makes it a lot more fun. Mm-hmm. Let's see. At 42:25, the mountainside, they just came out. Gandalf had just, fallen. We won't say died. But Gandalf had fallen, and it just another one of these where we've been in the mountain, inside the mountain so long, and you come out and it looks so nice. And this is another one of those scenes, like you said earlier, where they're not afraid to pause and they all just stop and mourn. And they even the characters are saying, give them a minute. I think it was it Boromir says it. I think give them a minute and Aragorn's telling Legolas, get them up. We got to move because they're not going to stop chasing us. But even the characters are like, let's take a minute.
Yeah. Even like Gimli, he's always like optimistic and ready to go and everything. He was pretty down on that scene too.
But it was a great opportunity for the picture to shine because you had the blue sky, but then you have the gray rocks, the white snow. I mean, everything was a lot brighter. Stark contrast to what we just saw inside the mountain. So at 43 minutes and 32 seconds, quick echo. We got a real nice echo of Aragorn yelling to Frodo. I think Frodo was like trying to walk away. He was like, Frodo, Frodo. And it was a really nice echo that I thought was something that I hadn't seen before. And that's why I made note or hadn't heard before, I should say. So a lot of times when you get an echo in a movie, the echo starts, like you'll hear the character at the front of the room, and then the echo goes around you, right? Like you hear it all over the place. And it's the church, you get that church effect or whatever you call it. Like this echo actually did it the way it would actually happen if you were out in the mountains where you would, if you send your voice out in a direction, it echoes back at you from that same direction, right? It doesn't come from behind you because the mountain, your voice is going forward. And they, in this scene here at 43:32, they did that. like he says Frodo and the voice is distinct in front of you, but then just gets more dispersed in front of you. And it sounds like it's further away. I played it a few times just to see if like, did I hear that right? Like it actually goes further into the screen on you. I thought it was pretty cool.
It's amazing.
And I say this all the time and every week, I'm like, when they do these little tiny details that most people would never notice, I think it's so cool. Cause it's only for people like us, you know, it's like most people never know they're watching it on their TV with the single speaker the TV came with.
Right,
and
right.
It's like all of this stuff is just for like nerds like us. They're like, that was awesome. Let's see. Let's jump to. Oh, I already talked about the cauldron at 5706. We talked about that at the 1 hour mark, 20 seconds. Sauron assembling the Orichai. Mm-hmm. That's an exploding scene of sound. Pretty cool. Let's see. At 108:08 on the move. Really nice cinematic shots here. This is when they have just left the elves and they're in the canoes, I believe, and they're going down the river.
Yeah.
You must have loved these with the, you know, where you're such a picture guy. Cause it was so, so cinematic.
Well, not only that, I'm an adventure guy. I mean, to get on a canoe, just sort of like, you know, like Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn, get on the river, going down the Mississippi. Like, yeah, it just really cool. It just sets up. I mean, it's like this whole series is like scene after scene, and you're anticipating, you know what's going to happen, and you just love it. Like you just love waiting. They're going down the river. You know what's going to happen, but you love taking that adventure with them.
And then at the 1 hour and 11 minute mark, roughly, you have when they come up on those kings of old.
Mm-hmm.
I really feel like this is another one of those scenes, like you said, where they're not afraid to take a pause and just let you enjoy the scenery.
Yeah.
That's pretty drawn out. That's almost 5 minutes here.
You're talking about the old kingdom of Parthgallon, I love how they did those big statues and like in the rock and everything. And
yeah,
that's like one of my favorite scenes of God. I don't know why I love that scene so much. I think what's cool about it too. So they all kind of separate. They're not all together, right? They kind of like Frodo goes off by himself, and then Boromir goes after him. So he's separate.
Mm-hmm.
Aragorn takes on it a bunch of Uruks by himself. Like he's
right.
I mean, everybody wants to be Aragorn, right? Like he's just not afraid.
Oh yeah.
But they all kind of separate, and they're all on this huge hillside or mountainside, like kind of like in their own places, getting attacked and fighting and trying to get around. I love how it's all separated. It's almost like if you're a kid and you're playing in a park, you know, and you just find all these different things going on. I don't know. It's a great scene.
Yeah. Well, at Aragorn, I have that Aragorn's stand. I called it. It was right after, obviously he sees the glowing sword mm-hmm. on Frodo. Mm-hmm. And then he goes to take them on, and that's 1 hour, 18 minutes, and 49 seconds. And, yeah, you're right. That just starts the entire thing. But right before that, we had a pretty cool scene of Boromir kind of turning on Frodo.
Mm-hmm.
And it's it was a lot of nice, discreet, ambient sounds around you, but there was a lot of dispersed sounds filling the room because you had that, like, you were kind of in Boromir's head a little bit. They were trying to portray that this wasn't 100, like he wasn't in his right mind. So they kind of changed the audio in that scene. That was at 1 hour, 15 minutes and 27 seconds, but that was pretty cool scene too.
I'm going to have to listen to that again. Cause I listened to it with headphones last night. But I have to listen to it with a more of a surround system. But I seem to recall that it did change. I mean, it's amazing really how audio kind of change what you see visually, like, or enhance what you're seeing visually. Yeah.
Yeah. That's talk about another tangent, but quickly, I've upgraded equipment, and it's one thing when you're the purchaser and you say, all right, I love this piece of equipment. It's doing a great job because you paid thousands of dollars and you're going to say like, this is great. But when I'll bring my wife in that has no idea what I upgraded, or she might know a piece, but say I've upgraded my projector and she thinks it sounds better, or mm-hmm. I've upgraded the sound and she'll think the picture is better. And it is amazing when you hear those opinions off somebody that has no, it's almost like a blind test. Like she knows like, oh, come on in and watch this. And she'll be like, did you get a new projector? And I was like, no, I got a receiver. Cause what a lot of home theater guys do is they'll buy a piece and then we'll ask for forgiveness later instead of asking for permission to buy it. And she'll be like, what did you get a new projector? I'm like, no, I got new sound though. Oh, and you get that blind test and it's kind of, you know, only because I didn't want to tell her in the first place, but it's not like I was trying to do it, but you're right. It's like you perception of things can change just by what you're hearing and what you're seeing. So like, that's why we're constantly in this evolution of upgrading our system because we want things to be better, but yeah, it is pretty cool.
Well, maybe, you know, I've been thinking about writing this article and I kind of started it, but about the best, you know, the 10 best movies to listen to rather than watch. And one of my favorites has been Reservoir Dogs, which is incredible. Oh. It's an incredible script. And the first time I saw that movie, I didn't see it. I actually listened to the whole movie because it was so great. And I was in another room.
Right.
And I just stayed there because I was like, I'm just going to listen to this movie. And it's one of those movies where I just remember it as being an audio movie, you know?
Right. Yeah. It's got an incredible soundtrack. For one, I've done that. I've said that on the podcast. One of the things I've done over the years is I'll get to a scene when you watch movies over and over and really enjoy them. I'll get to parts of movies and scenes where I just close my eyes and try to listen to the scene so that you can really, so your eyes aren't fooling you and you're listening for the sounds move around the room. And that to me is something I really enjoy that because sometimes you can place a sound just because of what you saw and you'll think you saw, you heard it over there when actually in actuality, if you close your eyes, it's a little bit different. But yeah, I don't know if I could make a list of 10 because it's like, man, that would be tough. It's like, that'll be interesting to read when you write that because I want to hear what you come up with.
Yeah. I mean, this whole thing is like, that's kind of an SEO thing. Like, you know, 10 best or 20 best. Or I like these articles that are doing like the 100 best, you know, like,
oh my really? God.
But yeah, it could be an article that sort of grows over time. And I've been thinking about that lately. Like, well, I'm going to discover another one. So why should I limit it to a number? And I can just update the article later.
Right.
So
yeah, that's pretty cool. Like but, I have my go-to scenes like that I have when I, I'll upgrade a piece in a scene that I've seen over the years over and over and over. And I always want to hear one that jumps to mind is Terminator 2 when he blows the wall out when they're just about to blow up Cyberdyne. And he had just pulled Linda Hamilton through a wall, right? And the SWAT team is coming in. They're about to be attacked. She yells, "Fire in the hole." And Schwarzenegger fires the grenade launcher at the wall. And then the scene shifts to the hallway and you see the wall blow out on the left and the piece of the wall goes all the way across to the other side of the hallway.
Wow.
If you remember that scene.
Yeah.
Okay. I saw that in a demo room back in the 90s and I, to this day, will never forget how distinct and clear that sound, the explosion on one side, the bass, and then the high pitched noise of when it hit the other side of the wall, other side of the hallway. Whenever I upgrade something, I upgrade speakers, whatever it is sound wise, I go to that scene just so I can use, I'll be like, that's it. And I can't tell you how many years I couldn't duplicate what I heard. And now I'm finally at the point where I'm like, I think I'm there. I think I've got it. But I'm, you know, you're always looking to upgrade. But every time it's like, that's one of those scenes that I know it's a great pan from left to right. And then, of course, Schwarzenegger reloads and he drops it. And you can hear that the cartridge of the grenade fall out onto the floor. And you can hear that. I think it rolls to the left or something. But watch that scene. Every single time I upgrade, I love it. That's one of those things.
I want to go watch it now. Watch that scene.
I get that all the time. I love it too. My listeners will be like, thank you. I just had to watch that. Or they don't have a copy of whatever I'm talking about. Like, just I had to buy that. That's okay. That's cool. But yeah. So, the scene that I wanted to talk about, the arrow pans at 1 hour, 21 minutes and 23 seconds. This is one of my favorite character in all of the Lord of the Rings is Legolas. And when he's firing that arrow, this is that scene at the end when they, like you said, they're all separated and they're going at it. And Legolas is on the left side of your room, and he's just one after the other, pulling and firing. But all the orcs he's firing at are on the right side of your room. It's a great shot. This is why we watched movies back in the 90s in letterbox, because you can't see this scene if it's not in a widescreen, right? Mm-hmm. But the sound, you get the pull of the bow is on your left side of the room, and you hear those arrows like plunging into the orcs on the right side of your room. And this is one that I didn't get a chance to watch it with my eyes closed, but I'd love to go back and see if it's actually happening, because I think some of the arrows land, you can hear them closer to the center of the screen, because, you know, he's firing in that arc on that mm-hmm. side. They're like, boom, boom, boom. It's such a cool scene, because to get those arrows, that's a small sound, the pull of the bow and the plunge of the arrow. Because there's a lot of other stuff going on. You have the score to deal with. You have everything, all the other battles going on. But just to hone in on that and listen to those arrows and the bow being pulled, and cinematically, it's a great shot.
Yeah,
it's just so much fun to watch. And I got to imagine that all those arrow pulls—that's all digital. He's not actually pulling and firing all those arrows. He's just doing the motion, then they throw the arrows in. But that's one of my favorite scenes in this second half of the movie. It's so much fun.
And that's, you know, I think, that's essentially the end of the movie. And I feel like, it's a dark ending, right? It's almost like The Empire Strikes Back, where it has a dark ending, right? But it's like having the first two Star Wars movies combined, because, you know, there's happy moments and then there's a sad ending, but It's a really good cliffhanger. It's emotional. It's sad. I mean, you got the moment when Sam swims out.
Yeah.
To Frodo, and he's almost drowned, and it's like,
yeah, he's willing to drown. Before he does that, it's funny you said Empire Strikes Back, because I was going to say A New Hope, because before that we had the Frodo on the shore wishing that he didn't have this. Right.
That's true.
And then what happens while he's wishing that, and you're hearing it through his head. So like your room is filled with that. His voice is filling the room. Mm-hmm. But then you get Gandalf comes in, and very much like Obi-Wan Kenobi, and Gandalf comes in and like speaks to Frodo in his mind, saying like, now is that Gandalf actually speaking to him, or is that Frodo remembering?
I think it's Frodo remembering. I'm not sure that, I don't know, whatever. That's getting beyond my.
Well, that's how I felt watching it. It was like, I was like, is this like A New Hope? Is this like Star Wars? Like he's Obi-Wan-ing him.
I don't remember Gandalf doing that with anybody else. I mean, Galadriel does that kind of stuff. But I don't know about it. It's a scene that's, I mean, there's a little bit of hope, but it's more of like a sad scene. And it's just like a little bit of, it's dark. It's kind of, you know, there's a lot of anxiety there. And when they overlook, you know, Mordor, you know, that's a beautiful scene at the end when they're overlooking.
That was my last note, was Mordor at 133:56, and like just a gorgeous picture. It was. Yeah. And but you also get to your point of like ominous, and while you're looking at that, and you're behind them, I believe. You're overlooking them and the scene. Yep. But you get this bass rumble come up when he says, I think it's Sam that says Mordor, and you get this boom come up through your seat and through you. It's not terribly loud. It's just there. And you're like, oh, yeah. So you're right. It does end on that dark note, but you're looking at a beautiful landscape.
Yeah.
Really cool. Really, really cool. But that's it.
Yeah,
we got through it.
That was some good points there. Some good things I have to go back and listen to again because of you.
I'll go back. Why do you sound like you're mad?
No, I'm not at all. I have to finish reviewing the next two movies. So I think I'm going to start that maybe tonight or the next night.
There you go.
Get through those.
Yeah, I'll
two.
Be doing. How would you? Did you have fun?
Yeah, man. I'll do it again.
You'll do it again? How about we do the second half of the next one as well?
Okay.
That would be in April. Is that cool?
Yeah. We'll
do that because I'll do the first half.
April. So you're doing once a month. You're doing half a disc every month.
Half a disc for the Lord of the Rings. Yeah. The Lord of the Rings trilogy. I'll do. So wow. Like March, I'll do the first half.
Okay.
And then in April, you and I will go through the second half again.
Yeah. Sounds
good. Is that
cool? Yeah. Sounds I'll have like some fun. Time set. So we can sync up our time stamps.
There you go. Yeah, we can actually go through it ahead of time and we'll know what we're doing. But I like the, honestly, I don't even care if we do that. It's because I just like this atmosphere. We just hang out and we'll jump mm-hmm. around and that's what we do. Two guys hanging out, talking. It's a good time.
We could attempt a watch together with, you know, at some point, you know, maybe with somebody else or whatever, you know, like a watch party. That'd be kind of fun.
Oh, yeah. That would be, we could do that. You're not allowed to, like, I can't. We could do one and say we just watch along and then people would play it and watch along with themselves. You say, all right, hit play now.
Yeah.
But you're not allowed to have the audio go through audio or the video.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It would just be us talking about, you know, watching the movie and then it would just be our audio.
And to be honest, I've heard those before and they don't sound too good because you're watching and waiting and there's so much
Dead
silence.
Yeah,
dead air. Yeah.
My buddy and I did it for back when COVID first started. I have another podcast where I do comics and we did mm-hmm. Saturday morning cartoons. So we did a watch along with Spider-Man and his amazing friends with,
nice.
You know, Fires. So, and that's like, those are only like 20 minutes long and you feel funny when you're sitting there just watching and not saying anything because you know it's an audio only podcast. So you're like, this is kind of weird.
Yeah. It has to work if the viewer or listener syncs up their own, feed.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well.
All right. That was great. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. Why don't you list off where everybody can find you and what you got coming up? What you got coming up special over at HD Report?
I mean, I'm trying to crank out reviews. I'm working with this actual video reviewer. So we're going to try doing some actual video in our reviews instead of just text.
Oh,
so
wow.
So that's,
okay.
That's kind of exciting. I'm working with a guy out of, I think he's in South Carolina. Anyway, South Carolina. I think he's in New York. That'll be coming up. Trying to do some more reviews. We're trying to keep everything up to date as far as like 4K on Netflix and Prime and HBO Max now has.
Yes.
Its third 4K table title. Why they can't like just make some other ones 4K? I don't know.
Yeah.
But you know, one of my Twitter users is funny because 20 Twitter viewers pointed out to me that Wonder Woman, the first Wonder Woman,
yes,
was actually 4K, which I didn't realize. I don't know when it actually happened. Do you know when it actually went 4K?
It was I do remember I saw that tweet and it's funny. I felt bad because I hadn't seen your tweet yet in the day. He got on you pretty quick. He was like, "No, this is actually the third one because you said their second one coming." Mm. And but yeah, they don't do a big press thing for it, but Wonder Woman, it was in the middle of January and I do remember seeing something from HBO or something that
really,
the first Wonder Woman came out in 4K.
Yeah.
So we had those two going for January, obviously 1984 and the first one.
Yeah.
I wish they would do, I read Cord Cutters. They have a daily thing. So I check that out because I'm always looking for what's coming next on HBO and it's not really prevalent. So maybe you could get on that.
I think every movie they release for the year, I think it's once a month, right? They're going to have a new movie.
Yes.
I think those are, I imagine those are all going to be 4K, Dolby Vision, Atmos.
From what I read, they're all going to be 4K and then Atmos if available. Because some of those movies don't even have that anyways.
Yeah.
So like obviously like a Christopher Nolan wouldn't even have Atmos in the theaters, I think.
Yeah.
Or maybe it does. I don't know. But they said if it's possible it'll be both, but definitely 4K.
Well, Godzilla and King Kong should be, I imagine.
That should definitely be. Yeah, 4K with Atmos, which it's not as good as the discs, but it's still really good.
Yeah.
I'll enjoy it. I'll probably see that in the theater as well. And people can reach you on Twitter. It's at HD Report, correct? No
yes,
dash. And your website is HD
dash. Dash, yeah. Some French company has that domain, and I have always wanted it, but hey, what are you going to do?
I love your name though. Like when you write it, like on Twitter, the HD report, cause it's all together. You actually have HDR in your name, which I think that's pretty cool. Cause it's all HD and the R capitalized, and then it's eport. But pretty cool. Pretty cool. And you can find me on Twitter at BrightsideHT, or you can email me at brightsidehometheater@gmail.com. And we are proud members of the Nerdy Legion. You can check out all the other great podcasts at nerdylegion.com. And that will do it for this week. So head on over to hd-report.com. Check out all the great stuff over there. And Jeff, thank you very much. This was a lot of fun. Great movie. And what a coincidence that this is what started you off.
Lord of the Rings, man. It just changed my life in terms of watching stuff at home. It was just a complete experience. Yep.
Truly wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Lord of the Rings. Look at that.
Maybe not. Maybe not. Who knows?
That's funny. All right. Thank you very much. And we'll see you in a couple of months.
All righty. Have a good one.
Thank you, everybody, for listening, and don't forget to go push play.
Hey, Fred.
This has been a Hey, Fred production with theme music by Jeff Bernhardt and Throne Vault Productions.